Gary DePaul with Unlabeled Leadership. Welcome to episode 16, Phyllis Milliken and Constructive Attribution. Let's get started. Leadership is founded on principles that guide how we behave towards others and even how we behave towards ourselves. You may have heard me talk about some of these, including connecting with others, putting others first, giving up control, and encouraging change. In this episode, Phyllis Milliken illustrates these principles and some more and some additional underlying beliefs that I talk about in previous episodes. Back in the 20th century, or two decades ago, a little bit more than two decades ago, I met Phyllis at Arthur Anderson in St. Charles, Illinois. Back then, Phyllis stood out because of her uplifting attitude. In other words, she was just a good person. Well, thanks to the power of social media, I've been able to keep up with her, and much has changed since those Anderson days. Phyllis is now an executive VP at a company called Sure People, and this is a company that specializes in talent development and analytics. Sure People is an innovative organization, and with people like Phyllis working for them, I think they're worth watching. Because of how Phyllis champions and mentors people, I wanted to give her an opportunity to talk a little bit about her experiences with leadership. In particular, I wanted her to talk about her constructive and practical way of interacting with other people. Before starting, I'm going to admit something that has nothing to do with the show. Right now, while narrating, I have two cats lying on me. I really don't know how this is going to work out. Part 1, Reducing Attribution Errors Through Positive Intent. One night when I was in my car getting ready to leave a parking lot, I was driving towards the exit and this vehicle came towards me with a teenager sticking out the passenger side, waving his arms frantically. I didn't know what to do. In fact, I really thought this was not good. It turns out the teenager was trying to get my attention to let me know my lights were off. And that is the power of the fundamental attribution error. I attributed the intent without even knowing for sure what their intent was, and I assumed the worst. Phyllis shares a couple of stories about positivity that may help in reducing attribution errors. Here's Phyllis.
I was working at an organization and we were working on a large scale transformation. Tight timeline, multiple work streams, interdependencies, board level visible. And the work streams were split between myself and my peers, other leaders within the organization. And, you know, like I'd mentioned, there were dependencies within each of the work streams. It also impacted many of the teams and organizations from a structure perspective. There was a level of protecting turf in some cases, you know, or concern around who might be impacted. As you can imagine, there was a lot of emotion associated with the transformation. I was working through these work streams. You know, there were things that were not getting to me when expected on time. And, you know, I just very transparently, you know, I was getting frustrated. You're trying to ensure that you're meeting your own deadlines, that you're moving things forward, that you're not the weakest link, so to speak. I was having a discussion with my boss at the time. She just, you know, she was really calm about it. Mm. So demeanor one, striking for me. What I learned just in that instance was your demeanor and how you're reacting to a situation impacts how the other person is reacting, right? In terms of how they're feeling.
The tendency is to begin to mirror what that person is projecting.
Exactly. And she just simply stated, you know, when I've been in similar situations, I try to presume positive intent and then engage in the discussion. The way I reacted was it genuinely caused me to pause and look at the situation entirely differently. You know, it made me pause thinking, am I presuming malicious intent? And gosh, like, why would I be presuming malicious intent, right? Why would I be presuming somebody is intentionally trying to do something that is going to derail? Since that time, It's honestly, it's transformed how I react to things. And I pause when I'm frustrated now. I pause and I presume positive intent. I remind myself, hey, you know, the situation is not someone trying to frustrate me. They're probably trying to do what I've asked for, deliver. And there's something else that's happening. Either I haven't communicated what I need clearly. There might be other circumstances that are in play. That's what I need to be seeking to understand where that disconnect occurred, so that way we could realign versus coming at it with that sense of frustration.
You don't know what you don't know. And if you don't know, you assume what you think you know, and then that's what gets you in trouble, not what's actually happening.
Yeah. I will readily admit I am not perfect at it. You know, there are times where I miss, but I do find myself doing that more often than not. It's genuinely helped just in terms of my ability to connect, you know, with my peers, my ability to think about the person versus the task and relating. That's helped to align and move things forward.
It's the human condition. We tend to fill in the gaps when our brains don't like untold stories or unfinished stories or uncertainty. And so our brains like to fill in where we don't have information. It sounds like what you're doing is you're deliberately trying to fill in positive information, give the person the benefit of the doubt rather than assuming the negative.
Exactly. And honestly, Gary, more often than not, you know, there's the occasional situation where maybe, you know, the intent wasn't all that great, but for the most part, there's something else that's going on. There is some form of a disconnect, or there's information that maybe I wasn't aware of. Genuinely pausing to really try to understand, it genuinely does help. And coming at it with a, hey, they're not trying to do anything evil. You know, they're not trying to do anything bad or malicious. Really does change the tone of the discussion.
And at the same time, they're probably doing something similar that most of us do and assume that they're in a threatening situation where they need to protect themselves because of all this change without realizing what it is that you're trying to accomplish and what the real benefit is. And when we tell ourselves stories and get upset about the stories, then it causes all sorts of problems. So it sounds like you're circumventing sort of that mental process by assume that they have good intent, or, you know, they may even be defensive and rightly so, that because they don't understand, and you're helping them understand the situation better and giving some clarity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Assuming positive intent can help with reducing attribution errors. Having a positive attitude can affect how you perceive your situations. Here's another story with Phyllis.
I went to a Catholic high school. I was in a full-blown pity party for myself because I was not happy to be going to that particular high school. It was not my choice. My religious ed teacher came in, and he was just a positive force of energy. Came into the classroom and he said, you know, every day I wake up and I make a choice. You could wake up and you could go, oh God, it's morning. Or you could wake up and, you know, he punched his fist in the air and you could say, good morning, God. That situation for me was so striking because it took me out of the pity party. It made me realize every single day you have a choice in terms of your attitude. You have a choice in terms of the way you approach your day. You have a choice in terms of the way you approach everybody around you. It sets the tone for how you live your life and what you personally believe you can do, what you believe the people around you can do, and the potential.
I love it. You're showing what it means to have control and not assume that you don't have control. You have control over your attitude, how you approach things. How many times in the morning do you wake up and say, oh God, I have to go to work today. I'm going to go there and just try to be miserable, you know?
Yeah.
It's just how we approach things. Our attitude makes such a huge difference. As in your first story with your boss, having that attitude can be contagious.
It can. And it really does have an impact on the people around you. And, you know, my observation through the course of my career is when you have an environment that you've got that positive kind of can-do attitude, not Pollyanna, but
yeah.
Hey, we can work towards or work out whatever the challenges are that we're facing. There's so much that can happen. Like the results are genuinely, they're incredible. The opposite, you know, I've seen things just spiral.
And when they do, there's another type of contagiousness. It affects other people. The whole ship, so to speak, starts to sink.
Exactly.
Now imagine if someone decided for the next 32 days, when I wake up, instead of grabbing my phone and looking at my text messages and the news and so forth, I'm going to spend 5 minutes and position myself mentally to prepare for the day and do that for 32 days. You know, the first 5 days, it may feel awkward, but by 32, it's not that you build a habit, but it becomes a cumulative effect. It takes at least 30 days or so for you to see the results and really experience the difference.
I would agree. I mean, I think, you know, these are small things that have a big impact. And I would say those two things, they really transformed, you know, how I think about things. When I get myself into everybody's in situations, they happen to everyone, where, you know, things are not going exactly as you thought they would. It's also a way to pull yourself out of that mire.
Mentally regrouping.
Yeah.
Part two, career reflections. Decisions about career changes are not easy. Our brains don't like change, especially faced with uncertainty. Most of the time, we just let the situations dictate when change needs to occur. In Phyllis's story, this isn't the case. Again, here's Phyllis.
Another organization I was leading, sales teams, and we were working through compensation plans. The organization that I worked for was relatively complex. There were a number of different business lines. We would get quotas from the multiple business lines, and we're trying to provide quotas based on specific solutions to our sales reps. And as we're working through the process, you know, one of the things that I was coming to realize that was that there were things about the way the process was working and the quotas were being identified that, quite frankly, became unattainable for the sales reps. And I genuinely became concerned about, you know, what are we setting people up to fail? How do we make this a bit more equitable and balanced across the teams? I was passionate about it because, you know, one of the things that I genuinely feel when you're working with your teams is if you are setting them up to fail, this goes beyond having stretch goals, but if you're setting them up to fail, you're failing as a leader.
What you're telling me is that with these quotas, this is the level of sales that they would have to achieve in order to receive their compensation. To achieve those things, either they have to do something unethical or give up, you know? So
I'll a disincentive. And so what you said to me, Gary, was, you know, Phyllis, you should care less. I was so struck by that because I'm like, I couldn't even reconcile it. Like, how do you care less about your people? And is it, you know, and where is that okay? To me, it kind of crystallized, do I want to be a part of something where you don't really care about your people? And so for me, that became kind of a tipping point in terms of, do I want to be a part of that organization? One, can I make an impact? You know, before I leave an organization, I genuinely think, can I make change? Can I change? Can I help to change the environment, the culture, you know, in a positive way? If that's the reason that's driving me. And if I come to the conclusion that I can't, then, you know, then I think, okay, again, it's about choice. Do I want to stay in this environment? Or do I want to go to someplace that's a little bit more aligned to my values? And that's for me where, you know, I think oftentimes there's a slow erosion that maybe sometimes is not even seen. And so I always try to kind of self-monitor, see what's happening around me to ensure that I'm not being moved to a place where, quite frankly, I am really misaligned my personal values with the organizational values.
If you're in management, upper management in particular, if you cannot control the environment or manage the environment so people can present themselves at their best, then you have to ask yourself, is this the right place for me? Especially if, like you just said, the values that you would subscribe to or aspire to conflict with what's going on around you with management and executives and the way things are going.
Yeah. Yeah. And in this situation, because I honestly, one of the things that I take the most pride in throughout the course of my career are some of the folks that I have coached and mentored throughout the years that have really excelled and succeeded in their own personal careers. I recognize they've done that, but I take a little piece of pride at their success. Being placed in an environment where I felt like, gosh, I'm really struggling with how I would coach or inspire to something that genuinely, but quite frankly, the math didn't work.
Gotcha.
That for me shoved me so far out of my value system. I took some pause. And then I thought, gosh, I would never tell somebody to care less. Yeah, I've been in some interesting situations throughout the course of my career. I'm sure we all have.
Yeah, and it's hard for you and for all of us if we're in a position where we have the opportunity to coach, to mentor, to champion other people. There is a certain amount of being proud of the person and enabling them to be at their best. If we're in an organization, a situation where we're not able to do that, then I think you're right. We have to take pause and say, is this the right place for me? And should I move on to where I can make a bigger difference?
Right. And it's okay at that point, right? And it's like giving yourself the permission. It's okay to ask that question. It's okay to evaluate. It's okay to move.
And it's okay.
I've seen people, you know, just stay and be miserable. I have found it's genuinely hard for some to give themselves the permission to make a choice on their personal behalf.
Let me ask you this. Have you ever heard of someone who decided to stay with an organization and they became one of the many zombies?
Oh, yeah.
They just go through the motions, but their passion isn't there.
Their passion isn't there. They're phoning it in.
Yeah.
And you can tell in organizations where that's occurring, where people, you know, they're just clocking in, clocking out, right? And they're doing, you know, just enough. And for them, it's just about collecting the paycheck and nothing more, that there's no joy in the work.
There's no joy. That's it.
And, you know, to me, that's a sad state. Yeah, I honestly found myself really fortunate currently in the environment that I'm at, because it's very collaborative. It's very collegial. We have a mantra, you know, that we have, which is we've got radical honesty, our consciously debating ideas and separating the idea from the person. And that's something I think over the course of my career that's a learned attribute. And there has to be an environment where it's a conscious effort to say we can absolutely disagree on some things, but we can still really like each other.
Yes.
And we can debate the merits of it and come to a better solution. But we need to be able to have that debate in an authentic and in a transparent way. And sometimes that means saying things that others, you know, won't necessarily like. But not take personally, right? It's not about you. It's about, I disagree with this point.
It's the concept. It's not the person itself. It's the behavior. It's not the person. The way I would summarize that, and knowing a little bit about the company you're with and how creative people are and the innovation that comes out of it, I'd almost like to say radical honesty leads to radical innovation.
Yeah, I would agree. And Gary, there's like small little things just in terms of how you're speaking to someone. So for example, you know, instead of saying, I disagree with you, you say, I disagree with that point.
Oh, yeah.
right? And so you've taken it out of the personal to debating the idea.
I think that's something we all could learn.
Yeah, especially given the environment of the last couple of days. I definitely think that's something that we can learn, which is, you know, it's okay to not agree. Let's have a genuine discussion about the idea versus creating, you know, what sometimes can feel like a personal attack.
Yeah. I did a post on LinkedIn some time ago, and in the gist of it is we haven't learned, or we should learn going through primary, secondary education, high school, whatever, how to have real conversations about politics, about religion, about controversial issues such as the right for bear arms, abortion, Black Lives Matter, all those things. We have to learn to how to have those conversations in such a way that we learn from ourselves and from the people we're talking with that who we disagree with.
Yeah, you know, that's a really, really good point. That's, I mean, honestly, I think that's a striking point. You know, we spend so much time in English courses learning the language, but we don't spend time empowering our kids in high school to learn how to more effectively communicate. And that's such an important skill. It's an important life skill. Yet often we're learning how to more effectively communicate, depending on your degree, might be in college, but often it's at a corporation. That's investing in some communication training.
Part 3, finding openings to shine. There are things that we can do to better our lives and the lives of those around us. Phyllis offers some advice for just doing that. Here's Phyllis.
And as hokey as this might sound, is to really understand, and this is something else that someone had said to me early on, really understand what fills your bucket and really understand what depletes your bucket. Now, I know that sounds a little hokey, but if you genuinely understand what you enjoy versus what you just want to avoid, and not because it's challenging, because there are things that are going to be uncomfortable that enable you to grow, but it will help you in terms of how you manage and take control of your career. Often, others will try to put you in a box, but that can only occur if you let them. For example, you're familiar with my background. I started in talent. There's not a natural, hey, you should be a sales leader, when at one point during my career, we were working on competency models and developing training. And, you know, that was a big part of who I was and the experience that I brought. But when I made that transition into sales and then becoming a sales leader, a part of that was ignoring these parameters that others were drawing for me. So that would be another piece of advice that I would give, just from a personal perspective and how you manage and grow yourself and grow your own leadership style, right? Because that will enable you to think about things differently, try new things, and not operate with these, quite frankly, artificial parameters that have been imposed. The second, empower your team and trust your team. And you will find that they will rise to the occasion if you treat them like a grown-up. And I'm saying that in air quotes. They will act like a grown-up and they will do amazing things, and then manage to the exceptions. That would be another area. Another kind of piece of advice is, it does make a difference if you take the time to get to know folks, build those relationships. Yep. You know, I grew up in an environment where, you know, I came from immigrant parents, and it was do your work and then play. So for me, what the impact was for me was, particularly early in my career, is I didn't, you know, like I would get to the meeting, get to the agenda right away. And then if we had time at the end of the meeting, then I would relax and have more of the relationship-oriented discussions. It was a challenge for me to flip that. Right? To make sure that I'm taking the time at the beginning of the meeting to, hey, check in with folks. How are you? You know, have the couple of minutes of relating. And what I found, right, is that is really, really important in terms of just really understanding each other and engaging with each other and ensuring that you have a better understanding of the person's individual context, right? And understanding what they have happening kind of brought a little bit more broadly in their life does impact what's happening with them at work.
Yeah, and that's especially true in this virtual environment, because when you're starting a meeting, you may have assumed that the person was at a desk if it was in person and walked over, went into the meeting room, you join in, you see them, and you know, you could jump right into it. When you're virtual, you don't know what was happening in the last 30 minutes. Maybe this was a parent that was dealing with a problem with a family member. So checking in and just making sure they're in the right place. It seems like there's giving them an opportunity to check in with you, so to speak, with what their mental state is and how they're doing. And sometimes being able to express that opens it up to say, to where they're ready to start. You know, that someone understands this is cool. I'm happy. Let's get to it now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say, you know, Gary, the higher level you become as a leader, it becomes even more important, because the team that you're leading and managing, they, you know, they don't have that opportunity to get to know you unless you create the opportunity for them to get to know you, investing in that time for them to get to know you. Otherwise, there can be pretty significant negative consequences, right? So if they're only seeing you kind of in your mission mode and in you're really focused on the priorities mode, that you can be creating unintentionally a scary environment, which would have the exact opposite effect that you probably intend. There's no leader that I know of that doesn't want to excel at leadership. And sometimes it's, you know, it's being vulnerable, being transparent and admitting mistakes. Being human is what surprisingly will be the most inspiring and motivating for your team.
It's so easy in the way that you described when you just jump into the agenda and all, somehow that moral compass, those principles, they can end up being not on the forefront. But when you're checking in and you're making sure that you're important to me, I want to know how you're doing, we're on the same team, is a message that comes across when you check in.
Yeah. Yeah. And just letting people to like opening the door and letting people get to know you. So, you know, often yes. What I'll do is I'll say, hey, there, you know, what you're going to find is, depending on when and how you've met me, if you've met me when I'm kind of in my analytical mode, I'm all about business, and I'll be, you know, it'll be question, because I'm trying to digest the information, get to how we got to that information. And I recognize that that's now, you know, now I recognize, hey, I could be pretty intimidating when I'm doing that. I want to be sure that the folks that I'm working with, they know I'm aware of that, and it's okay to call me out on that. That's not my intention. It's me trying to kind of assimilate the new information, understand the basis of the information, and really has, quite frankly, nothing about the actual work or them personally. It's more about me digesting. And by just being open about those types of things, you're empowering others to work more effectively with you.
Phyllis Milliken is the Executive Vice President of Sure People. My thanks to Phyllis. For links, go to the show notes. If you have comments or questions, go to unlabeledleadership.com, click the message icon, and leave a voicemail up to 1 minute. Maybe I'll play it on the air. If you rate the show on iTunes, leave a comment about how the show helped you. Maybe I'll read that on the air as well. Finally, thank you for supporting the show. Until next time, lead on.